Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 302, recorded August 16th, 2016.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
We have two 16s in our date tonight.
Oh, because it's the 16-16, yeah.
Yes, but we don't actually have a 16th month, so we can't ever get to the part where we have three.
No, I don't think we could.
Anywho, today we have Tom and Evesham, UK, and Jeremiah in Grand Rapids, Michigan, Mick in Carnforth, UK, and Laura, who contacted us through our contact page on the website.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And we have a few little fishy updates.
Are we going to do those first or
afterwards?
Yeah, let's
do those first.
Okay.
Really quickly. I guess it's not fishy, it's shrimpy, but...
Well, you know, it's aquatic.
As you probably know, I think we mentioned last week I hatched some beaver tail shrimp. They're quite large now. They grew amazingly quickly. I released a video on the YouTube channel detailing their about the first 8 days of their lives. They hatched looking much like newly hatched brine shrimp, but bigger. And just grew like crazy, and within the week they were a lot bigger than most adult brine shrimp, and now many of them have exceeded an inch in length and are still growing.
So they're pretty big.
And I'm now able to differentiate male from female. The males have the claspers that look something like antlers, if you're fanciful, which I am.
Fanciful is a good thing to be.
The females appear to have very long antennae, longer than most. And their tails are kind of an orangey-red color and flat.
The females are?
The males and females, both.
All of them.
All of them, which is why they're called beaver tail shrimp, because it's a paddle-shaped tail. And it's just been fun to watch them grow. There are about 20 of them in there, and it looks like they're going to keep growing. They show no signs of abating. I'm also getting my shell dweller tank ready to go. It has substrate in there, and it's now cycling. It's been cycling for, I want to say, a little over a week now. And I just tested the ammonia to see where it was yesterday, and showing in a positive ammonia reading. So I'll wait a few more days and test it again and see. When we get zero, then I'll check for nitrite. So cycling's underway. I've got the fish ordered, and they should be here early next month.
Very good. Should we go to Tom in Evesham?
Yes.
Okay. And he had contacted us before about his fish who was feeling a bit under the weather.
Yes, his plenty.
Yes. And we gave him some information. He said, thanks for the heads up. I'll give the surrounding area a good disinfect and get some gloves for water changes. The pictures I've seen online look much worse than my fish, and he doesn't seem lethargic or offers food, because we were wondering if it might be mycobacteria.
Mycobacteriosis, yeah.
I've attached a picture where you can just about see the spot. You might have to zoom in. Thanks for help. I really appreciate it. So what did you think of the picture?
Actually, the picture didn't come through.
Oh.
And that time was the time where I was kind of crazy trying to get ready to leave on camping trip. So
you didn't get to get back to him.
I didn't get to get back to him.
Okay, well, we will try to get back to Tom and get the picture. Hopefully his fish is still okay.
Yeah, it seems to be doing okay. Mm-hmm. I'm not too worried because...
Yeah, that's good. He's still eating.
Yeah.
That's always a good thing. Okay, well, Jeremiah in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He says, hello, Russ and Kelly. I decided to be whimsical and lengthen the hello for no particular reason. Which decision we fully support.
As we appreciate whimsy.
Yes, we do. All
in
whimsicality is highly encouraged. He says, I'm sorry I didn't send in anything for episode 300. We have been very, very, very busy with the move, and then I was very, very tired and needed to relax. We totally understand how that goes.
Yeah.
No worries.
It's been a year since more than a year since we moved.
A little over a year.
We're still tired.
I still have to do some boxes. They're still sitting over there as we speak.
We've gotten the majority of them, but there are a few left.
Yep. He says, the good luck you wished us over Facebook Messenger worked. We closed on the house and are now all moved in. Huzzah!
Congratulations!
That is exciting. Now that I've moved, I thought I'd provide an update on my animals. Moving the fish tank was a chore, but I didn't experience any actual difficulties, just a lot of inconvenience. I think that's a good word to describe moving fish tanks.
Right, that's about the best it can come out right there.
Yeah.
So that's good.
A sponge filter and a battery-powered air pump and my lone neon tetra and snail were fine. I decided to put the fishy in the basement due to construction going on outside the house. I also decided to take the cork bark out of the tank and silicone it to some tile so it stays down but is movable. It's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
I've done that, and now I'm considering getting some plants and tying or gluing them down. Then I'll add just enough sand to cover the tiles. Eventually, I planned on getting either more neons or some cardinal tetras, as I have heard cardinals are more cold-hardy and will school with neons. I think having a cold-hardy fish is nice for a basement.
It is definitely
especially
true.
Especially in Michigan.
Yeah, that a cold-hardy fish is good for a basement. But mm-hmm. in my experience, neons are actually more cold-hardy than cardinal tetras.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Where are they from in the wild, both of them?
Well, they're both from South America, mm-hmm. Amazon River Basin area.
Oh, you know. Okay.
But they... It appears that neons are a little less... That cardinal tetras are a little less cold hardy. That is my experience and what I've read. I would be interested to see where you heard that. But at any rate, I once tried to keep them both together. I should say I once tried keeping them both together, as there's a distinction there.
Is there?
Yes. Tried to keep indicates that I might have failed. Well, tried keeping... indicates that I actually did it and may have succeeded.
Okay, your language teacher voice is coming out. I think in normal parlance, they're the same.
Well, at any rate, I kept them together successfully. From the research I did, the lower range for cardinal tetras and the higher range for neon tetras intersects. So if you're keeping them kind of like around 77 degrees or so, right close to there, within maybe a couple of degrees of that you're in that range where they both do well, kind of the sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
And they did really well for me. See, I had, I can't remember how many cardinal tetras I had, but I had maybe 9 or something like that. Maybe 12, I don't remember exactly. Nice group of them. They're beautiful fish, and they were doing really well. I had them in this 20-gallon planted tank, and they were doing fabulously. Extremely bright colors. I had do-it-yourself CO2 on them, so the pH was... you know, on the low end, and they were doing really well, except they were very shy. They would come out to eat and everything, but they would kind of hide in the plants and everything. I thought, this is not fun. They're beautiful fish, and I don't see them very often. So, and this was a number of years ago, quite a long time ago, before we started the podcast, even. And
We could date our lives pre-podcast and post-podcast.
At least I think it was.
Except before. They have the same initials.
Pre-podcast and post-podcast, yeah, it doesn't
PPC.
Mean...
PPC, that's
you can't
not
put PPC
work.
At the end, yeah.
We'll have to say before podcast and after podcast.
There you go. But as soon as I put the neons in the tank, the cardinal tetras seem to relax. They seem to function well as ditherfish, bringing the other fish out. And so the cardinal tetras became much more outgoing. The neons were kind of more outgoing to begin with. And all of them... were nicely colored up and did really well, and everything was fine. Until, of course, we had a big accident, which I've talked about on the podcast before, while
which
moving.
Which accident was that?
It was while moving.
Which one was it? We
which
moved a
what?
Lot.
Which
moving?
Which
accident?
Well,
which
moving? Moving up to Salt Lake.
Oh,
when
and
when we
they
moved to Salt Lake City, and they didn't make it.
Made it.
And I've talked about that, so I won't go into that. But at any rate, while they lived for quite a while before we moved together, perfectly happily, it seemed to do. They seem to do well, but just check out, see what you can find about that, to see if you can find some other sources that talk about cardinal tetra temperature. Because mine, you know, did well. I think it was around 77 or 78 that I used, and they did well. I would just advise a little caution about changing that, basically, about going too low.
Okay.
But neons themselves, if you just do neons, sorry, don't mean to interrupt.
That's okay.
But if you just do neons, it might not be too bad if you have them on the cooler end, you know, like 74 or something like that, 73 even maybe.
Okay.
I did keep neons in Hawaii in a cooler tank, and they didn't do very well. They started getting some fungusy growth on them, which was kind of weird. None of them died from it, but I switched them. See, I had them in my air-conditioned office, and I had some white clouds at home. And white clouds are excellent cool water fish, so I ended up switching my white clouds to my office, where it was about 70 degrees, and brought them the neons home, where it was, you know, it was at least in the mid 70s all the time.
If not 80s,
and the neons did much better. So,
well, maybe you should look into white clouds.
White clouds are awesome.
Wants a cold water fish.
And they are an awesome cold water fish, or cool water fish, I should say. They are pretty, and they're not quite as brilliant as neons or cardinal tetras, but they're fun. And you can find some pretty nice ones these days.
The red stripe
one? They have a similar kind of coloration. They used to be called the poor man's neon tetra.
Mm-hmm.
And the babies are actually brilliant, mm-hmm. really brilliantly colored, and can be even brighter than neon tetras. But as they get older, they kind of dull out a little bit.
Okay.
But if you have them at a low pH and they're in good conditions, not super low, but you know, on a lower end of pH, they're pretty bright. They stay nice. They just don't stay quite as brilliant as they did when they were young.
Okay. We were talking last time about what
critters... Is your dream pet?
Yeah, what critters people dream
that
about
keeping.
That
was Matt's question. Yes. Matt in Perth, Western Australia, yeah.
And, Jeremiah says, as far as dream animals, I actually used to keep a spreadsheet of all the taxa I wanted to keep. With my state's new, more restrictive wildlife laws, my budget and limited time, as well as my preference for hardier animals, I got rid of it and decided to just wing it. Having that much planned out honestly took out a lot of the fun of the hobby as well. It's true, sometimes you just need to be able to be spontaneous and think, I'm going to do this now.
Yep.
Right now, my must-have list includes oscarfish, green tree pythons, Sumatran short-tailed pythons, and some manner or other of boa constrictor. The trouble is, these are mostly tropical animals, and my basement is currently a chilly 65 degrees. My current animals all seem fine, with the exception of one tarantula who passed, but it was very high-strung, and I think the move was just too much. And my roach colony, which I had been having issues with already. But I want to see how things go in our Michigan winter before I get much new stuff. That's probably pretty wild. I mean, wise. Yeah, sorry. Reptiles are generally much more cold-tolerant than we mammals give them credit for, but I am a worrier by nature. I am considering a large heated aquarium, around 75 gallons or so, for an Oscar in the same room. I think it might help raise the ambient temperatures a bit. Not sure. Lastly, as far as blue-tongued skinks go, I know Russ wants one, but Kelly seemed skeptical. There is one big negative to keeping a blue-tongued skink. It completely, utterly ruined all other lizards for me. I have been keeping geckos for a while. I have kept Leos, a crested gargoyles, and a Chinese cave gecko. My Bluey is both easier and far more rewarding to keep. He has much more personality. Monitor lizards interested me, but the extremely high temperatures needed for basking make me fire cautious. Blueys need much more reasonable temperatures and won't eat you out of house and home like a monitor. Much easier temperament, too.
Interesting.
Ta-ta for now.
I'd be interested in knowing how they're easier to keep, because to me it seems like crested geckos are, like, hands down the easiest lizards in the world to keep. They're super easy.
And I guess it depends on your gecko, but Tiki has all kinds of personality and is very social.
She does. And so we're not discounting what you're saying. We're just interested. I would like to hear a little bit more about that.
Tell us about their care.
Yeah. We have two crested geckos. One has a lot of personality. One has less personality.
He's just a little... Well, we got him when he was older. We got Tiki when she was only a month old, so we basically hand-raised her and hand-fed her the whole time.
Right.
And so she loves people.
She loves people. She loves to interact. She loves to eat out of our hands. And the other one that
Jake
we got as an adult, Jake, is just not that excited about eating bugs in the first place. And when you handle him, he's fine. I mean, he's a crested gecko. He's fairly low-key, but he's just a little more high-strung than Tiki is. And,
he doesn't have as much fun being with people as Tiki does.
Right. And so, I would be interested in hearing more about it. Blueys have interested me for a long time, so if you have more information about that, that would be cool.
Okay. Should we go to Mick in Carnforth?
Yeah.
It says, hi, guys. In answer to the background noise on the last few shows, I hadn't heard anything until it was mentioned, but then it was quite obvious. As I usually listen to the show driving to work, there's always some background noise anyway.
Okay, I want to talk about that for a second.
Yeah.
Okay, this week we are recording in a different location, as Kelly promised we would. Hopefully you notice a difference. Let us know. It's still in our house, of course, but this is in the basement, as far from the window fan as we could possibly get.
Yeah.
Or not window fan, the attic fan.
Attic fan.
And we've also turned off the evaporative cooler. To
prevent there is a window and there's a road outside, but I don't know if you can really hear the cars.
Yeah, and the window's closed, so hopefully that helps. Anyway, let us know how this episode turns out. We're hoping that that will help. And once the weather cools down in a month or two, we probably won't have to worry about it as much, because the attic fan shouldn't be coming on, and The cooler shouldn't be coming on either.
Yeah. We'll have about 2 weeks, or maybe, if we're lucky, 2 weeks, where we don't really need the swamp cooler on yet, and we haven't turned the heater on yet.
Right. The transition is abrupt and extreme, generally. Yep.
Okay, Mick says, I also thought that I would share my pie-in-the-sky fantasy setup, which would be Galapagos marine iguanas and the sea beneath. That would be interesting.
It would indeed.
This would cover a multitude of my passions and be very exciting, if not near impossible, to achieve.
Probably true.
But the thought of the iguanas on a basking cliff being able to splash down below into the sea and graze on the algae would be amazing. Obviously, there would have to be a viewing pane under the water level to watch them graze and enjoy all the rest of the marine fauna that would go with it. Having animals that actually sneeze excess salt in a projectile manner also appeals to the child in me.
I love that. That's funny.
And that's something we've always kind of dreamt about somewhere in our house or something. You know, you have some kind of setup where you can look down into like a koi or a goldfish pond, and then in a different part of the room there's the glass, the pane glass, where you can see into the water.
Right.
We talked about that various times. Well,
one of the reasons we talked about it is because we went to the St. Louis Zoo, which has setups like that.
And they're really cool.
They have a lot of setups with a large land area and with organisms living in them, and a large underwater area with fish and other aquatic organisms living in them, and many of them are viewed from different points. Like, they have a wall with several of these exhibits embedded in them, and you, from one side of the exhibit, you focus on the water section, and then you go up into a different room, up some stairs, and then you look down at the land section. You can still see the water from the land section and vice versa, but the focus is on a different part from different viewpoints, and it's quite amazing.
That's pretty cool.
And that's one of the reasons we thought about doing it that way.
Yeah.
It is fascinating. So, though they may not be Galapagos iguanas, an enclosure like that might not be entirely out of your reach if you were to design something maybe a little bit smaller, but on the same
principle. You could make
principles.
It in the shops. You've got room.
That would be fun.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, plus it would be fun to watch them sneeze.
It would.
So
I was always thought that was the coolest thing.
Okay, should we go to Laura?
Yeah.
Okay. She says, hi, my son asked us for a fish, and my husband and I decided to get him one for his birthday. We haven't had a fish before, and we're thinking of getting a saltwater aquarium the whole family can enjoy, which means we need to do some research. I came across your page and appreciate the information. In that spirit, have you guys seen this great fish ownership guide? And she puts a link in. My husband and I have been referencing this extensively as we make our decisions and get ready, and I thought maybe it'd be a good one to share in your fishy link section. We appreciate the help. Thanks again, Laura.
Well, I think it's really cool that you found our webpage. It looks like she found specifically the do-it-yourself CO2 resources page that we put up years and years ago.
Long time ago.
To help people figure out how to set up a CO2 generator with the yeast style one. And it's also really cool that they're doing their research. So kudos to you and your husband for doing research.
You get points.
That's always the best way to go. And I took a look at this website that they sent, and it looks like they've collected a lot of good resources for people to look into as they're just getting into this hobby. So we should put it up on the Fishy Links section, and we can put it up on the show page for this week. And I think it's really cool
so
that you're embarking. And hopefully you can become a podcast listener and let us know how it's going as you set up your marine tank. And you can refer to the experienced marine tank keepers who contribute to our show, too. You can ask questions and maybe they can help you out a bit. So hopefully it will go something like that.
Alrighty then.
Okay, I think that's just about it for the week. So, ladies and gentlemen, everyone,
may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquaramax Audio. For additional episodes, please visit aquaramax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquaramax.com.